All right, good morning. I'm going to start off with playing a track. It's the last, it's out of a debate, Greg Monson and Gordon Stein.
The technology works.
There it is.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's Greg Monson's closing statement at this debate. It's about 2 hours long. Really a good to hear the interaction between the two, where Greg, in fact, I was going to say, if anybody wants to borrow any of these, you're welcome. This is his book, and this is sort of become a classic debate for showing this presuppositional method, because the atheist just doesn't know what to do with it. And it is, it's foreign, and so here's his closing statement. I'm not going to play it all of it, maybe 5 minutes of it.
Dr. Bonson, your 10-minute closing statement.
I'll begin my closing statement by thanking the debate team for inviting both Dr. Stein and myself here for this interesting evening and interchange, and thank you all for giving up an evening to discuss what I consider a very important question, and I thank Dr. Stein for coming and for his graciousness toward me. As far as my rebuttal, my closing statement, I need to deal, I think, first of all, perhaps in the entire time, analyzing this remark that my statements have been tonight irrational. Well, perhaps they have. But if you're saying so, it doesn't make it so. That's something we just heard as well. And so if my statements have been irrational, then we're going to need some standards of reasoning by which these statements have been shown to be irrational. Dr. Stein has yet to explain to us, in even the broadest, simplest Sunday school child manner that I told you about laws of logic, laws of science, and laws of morality, he hasn't even begun to scratch the surface to tell us how, in his worldview, there can be laws of any sort. And if there can't be laws or standards in his worldview, then he can't worry about my irrationality, my alleged irrationality. The transcendental argument for the existence of God has not been answered by Dr. Stein. It's been debated, it's been made fun of, but it hasn't been answered. And that's what we're here for, rational interchange. The transcendental argument says the proof of the Christian God is that without him you can't prove anything. Notice, the argument does not say that atheists don't prove things. The argument doesn't say that atheists don't use logic, science, or laws of morality. In fact, they do. The argument is that their worldview cannot account for what they are doing. Their worldview is not consistent with what they are doing. In their worldview, there are no laws, there are no abstract entities, there are no universal things, there are no prescriptions. There's just material universe, naturalistically explained, in the way things happen to be. That's not law-like or universal, and therefore, the worldview doesn't account for logic, science, or morality. But atheists, of course, use logic, science, and morality. And in so doing, atheists give continual evidence of the fact that in their heart of hearts, they aren't atheists. Their heart of hearts don't know the God I'm talking about. This God made them. This God reveals himself continually to them through the natural order, through their conscience, and through their very use of reason. They know this God, and they suppress the truth about him. One of the ways we see that they suppress the truth about them is because they do continue to use the laws of logic, science, and morality, though their worldview does not account for them. Dr. Stein said the laws of logic are merely conventional. If so, then on convention, he wins tonight's debate, on convention, I win tonight's debate. And if you're satisfied with that, you didn't need to come in the first place. You expected the laws of logic to be applied as universal standards of rationality. Rationality is not possible in a universe that just confines them to convention. Dr. Stein said the laws of science are law-like because of the inherent character of matter. But Dr. Stein doesn't know the inherent character of matter. Now, if you were God, he might reveal that to us. And I think God has revealed certain things to us about the operation of the universe. But he's not God. He doesn't even believe there is a God. Since he hasn't experienced all the instances of matter and all of the electron reactions, or all the other things that science scientists look at. Since he hasn't experienced all of that, he doesn't know that those things are universal. He doesn't know that the future is going to be like the past. When he says, you know, it always has been in the past, and what if it changes tomorrow, won't that make the front pages? That's not an answer. You see, we're asking, what justifies your proceeding on the expectation that the future's like the past? To say, well, it's always been that way in the past, it's just to beg the question. We want to know on what basis your worldview allows for the uniformity of nature and laws of science. Thirdly, we spoke of laws of morality tonight. We said, they have laws of morality. The utilitarian standard of what brings the greatest happiness to the greatest number. Well, that doesn't justify utilitarianism to announce it. He's announced that it's a standard. But why in an atheist universe should we live by that standard? Marquis de Sade enjoyed torturing women. Now, why should he give up torturing women so that he might bring greater happiness to those women that he was torturing? Now, I've got an answer for that. So I'm not going to try and like, so maybe some of you have ended up liking, but at least I can begin philosophically to deal with that. I have an answer. A universal absolute about morality. Dr. Stein does not. He simply has an announced, stipulated standard. And morality can be stipulated, and of course, Martin de Sade can stipulate his own, even if Dr. Stein has stipulated his own. Why should we feed the poor? He says they want to do that. I grant that. My argument tonight has never been that atheists are the lousiest people in the world. That's not the point. Some Christians can be pretty lousy too. But why is it that I call atheists or Christians lousy when they act in the ways that we're thinking of? Because I have absolute standards of morality to judge. Dr. Stein does not. And therefore, once again, from a transcendental standpoint, the atheistic worldview cannot account for this debate tonight. Because this debate tonight has assumed that we're going to use the laws of logic as standards of reasoning, or else we're irrational. But we're going to use laws of science. We're going to be intelligent men that way. We're going to assume induction and causation and all the things that scientists do, and it's assumed moral sense. So we're not going to be dishonest and try to lie. I'm just trying to deceive you. I mean, if there are laws of morality, I can just take out a gun right now and say, okay, Dr. Stein, make my day. Is there a God or not? You see, if he argues, oh, no, you can't murder me because there are laws of morality, therefore he's made my day because I'm in the debate. That shows that the atheist universe is not correct. But if he says, oh, no, we're on the last one standards, you got by convention and stipulation, that's one thing, then I just pull the trigger and I say, well, then I'm in the debate anyway. Would you expect me to win the debate in that fashion? Absolutely not. You came here expecting rational interchange. I don't think we've heard much from Dr. Stein. I've asked him repeatedly, it's very simple, I don't want a lot of details, just begin to scratch the surface, how, in a materialistic, naturalistic outlook on life, man and his place in the world, can you account for laws of logic, laws of science, and laws of morality?
And the transcendental argument for the existence of God is that without God, you can't prove anything. And so even by by the atheist showing up for the debate, he lost the very act of showing up, because now we're going to use laws of logic. Well, that comes from our worldview. That comes from our God who made those things available. And these three charges are constantly leveled at Christianity. It's irrational, laws of logic, it's unscientific, how can science exist without God, and this is the newest kid on the block, is that it's immoral. It's evil in the world proves the non-existence of God. It's a pretty new argument over the last couple thousand years, and yet, you know, God orders the eradication of the Amalekites. That's immoral. Well, okay, by what standard? If you're saying there is no God to start with, then who are you to even say anything is immoral or not immoral? And without God, there are no absolutes. And so, you know, all truth is relative. Something is either relative or it's absolute.
Well, Michael, don't you think, this is the thing that I've encountered I think it's been around maybe the last 3-4 decades, but is people would say everything is relative and absolute for that person. You can have absolutes.
Yes.
They're just subjective to what your absolutes are.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? It's a circular argument that it makes no sense, but people are very ingrained in that. Everything is relative, and you define your absolutes, and those are your absolutes, and who am I to argue with them? And mine are different. And
so absolutes are relative to me.
Correct. And they feel very secure in that stance, even though it seems absurd.
It is, but it is. Yeah. And that's where we're... That position is irrational, unscientific, and even if we get in very far into it, it becomes immoral because there is an outworking.
I agree, but it's hard to get someone convinced. Yes. They're absolutely convinced in their relativity.
Okay, yeah. And that's where we go up to this level, and which is, or I'll start more with that next week, is there are abstract, immaterial, invariant, universal objects, like numbers. So, is it absolutely or relatively true for me or anybody that Ronald Reagan was president in the 1980s?
Well, he's not my president, so...
Hi, Travis, you're probably an illegal alien. You need to be deported if he's not your president. But it's an absolute truth that, and this is things that are more recently verifiable in the past, is that it doesn't matter who you are. That's a fact of history that cannot be changed. It is absolutely true that 2 plus 2 equals 4. It's not my truth. If I decide 2 and 2 equals 5, then I should be flunked out of math class or something. So that there are things that are personal preferences. And that's mostly what people are talking about. Because there exists such a thing as personal preferences, you like purple, I like blue, that's relative to us. But we don't get to decide what 2 and 2 equals.
The scary thing is nowadays, and I should, I don't know if scary is the right word, but
concerning.
I hear what you're saying, concerning, is that it's becoming, you know, our daughters just started teaching, and the 2 plus 2 is 5? Isn't it? Well, okay. You know, they're allowing that little bit of,
yes,
the absolutes, even of 2 plus 2, is getting so great. It's kind of...
It's concerning. That's kind of how these philosophical things work, like cancer.
Yeah.
It just gets worse and worse and worse until somebody says, enough.
Right. And the only reason I bring it up is because I've had these conversations with my mom ad nauseum. And
so ask her.
I will believe
does 2 plus 2 equal 4 for you? Or can it can equal 5 for me? And they're both... True.
No, so, but her response would be to that is that there are moralistic things or value-based things that
exactly.
That then she would equate God into that category.
Yes.
And I've had decades of experience, and my mom's very intelligent.
Right.
She's a highly intelligent person, and she loves a good debate. Don't you just love a good debate?
Mm.
And like sometimes I just like to have Thanksgiving dinner, Mom.
there is a word called sophist, and it's somebody who debates for the purpose of debating. Because there is no right or wrong answer. We're just
right.
Gonna, and
some loves the intellectual interchange and the stimulation.
Yes.
Yep.
But no there are no conclusions that we can arrive at.
That's my mom to a T.
And this is where this is so powerful, is because it gets down underneath all of that. And if we are deceiving one another by proclaiming certain arguments and building bridges to a conclusion and completely bypassing this below the surface stuff, we can make an, as human beings, we can justify anything, no matter how atrocious or murderous or benevolent. We can justify anything as long as we kind of keep this covered up. Mm-hmm. We don't want to go down here. we don't want to go down to look in the basement of our belief systems. Because we want to come to these, I've already decided what the conclusion is. And that's the myth of neutrality. We all do, we do that. And in school and stuff, there, the conclusion has been predetermined. Now we got to back up and kind of come up with this, but we can, we have this alternate route to test stuff. And that's the presuppositional argument, the transcendentals. How, if we get into these things, the arguments can't stand. And it, if it's a just purely a matter of will, then talk about the weather or something else.
Right. Yeah. Right. And that's where it becomes a futile thing. I mean, you say the same thing over and over. And
part of this process of the presuppositions is get the and the asking questions is the greatest way. So let me clarify a little bit. So you think we're animals. Okay? You think there's no God. So on what basis can we even have an intelligent conversation? Where does that come from? We think everything should be personal preference. If there is no absolute, it's personal preference. Mm-hmm. And a year from now, when we change our personal preferences, we're proving it's not absolute. And some of it's just being a little bit bold enough. Sort of the key to boldness is having a pretty good idea what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Now there's still the fear. Paul said, "Pray that I might have boldness." Well, there he knew once he starts opening his mouth in the synagogue, there's going to be a revival or a riot. And so that it's intimidating that way to be able to speak, knowing that the consequences may not turn out so well. Mm-hmm. But to know. He understood exactly what he was talking about, but how it was going to be received on the other end, we leave that to God. We just put it out there and leave the results to Him.
Well, the problem is, like you're saying, and people like my mom, they don't go under the surface, and they're content. Mm-hmm. So they say. I mean, I think if you press them, they're really not content when you catch them in the right moments, but they just bop along the surface and don't even deal with that stuff underneath. And they would say, next year, if my choices or things change, then so be it. Okay, that's not my absolute truth.
So absolutes change.
They do.
This is where you live in there.
Right. But I mean, that would be the response. And they're content in that because they're not really, like you said, getting into the basement. And they put a veneer over the top of, you know, yeah, it's all good. You know, who am I to tell you that?
Exactly. Who are you?
Right.
What are you? You're just an animal? Okay. And this is where the questioning comes in. Get them, by asking questions, get them to the place where I would rather be irrational than believe in God. Mm-hmm. I would rather be unscientific, and we'll get to that in the evidential part of it. Yeah. I would rather be immoral. Mm-hmm. I know people that they're living together, and they, for their justifications of why, and they know if God is real, what I'm doing is wrong. Mm-hmm. If God is real, He won't be happy about how I'm living my life and how I'm. It's all the things that people do to try and shove the God who has revealed Himself